This year is different from all the other years. People were asking a shaila that I never had before. A lot of people can't go to shul, so they have their own Megillah and they have to learn at home, but they don't know the trup and they don't know the nekudas, and they can't get a balkari to learn for them. So they want to know, can they write in pencil the trup and the nekudas? A few people called me up at that shaila, the same shaila. So in Yerideya, in Hilchas Sefer Torah, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from earlier sources that if the Sefer wrote a Sefer Torah and Melech HaTchila, he put in, from the very beginning, he put in the Nekudas with the drop. So it's puzzled the way it is, because in the Sefer Torah, if you have an extra, if you're missing a letter in the Sefer Torah, the Ramban and the Hakdamah to Chumash quotes from the Zohar. Ramban quotes a lot from the Zohar. Rabban in his Hagdamah to Chumash quotes from the Zohar, Sefer Torah, Shechosar Esachas Psula. The Rambam also quotes that. The Rambam also had the Zohar. There are a few places where the Rambam has a line that the only source that we know of is the Zohar. The Rambam says when you do Chalitza, after the woman, after Yevama, removes the shoe from the right foot of the Yavam, she throws it away. It doesn't say that in the Gemara, that the source is in the Zohar. Sources in the, maybe that was the common practice. Maybe the Rama was writing, maybe he didn't know the Zohar, just wrote that was the minig. But so this idea, Sefer Torah Shechasar Isachas, is puzzle. So the Rama writes, and yes, it cannot pull down. You have a Sefer Torah that has an extra word, that has an extra letter. But just like Chasar is puzzle, if you have an extra letter, it's also puzzle. Yes, it cannot pull is an idea the Gemara has in Eilu Treifas. It doesn't apply to all the organs of the animal. If an animal has three eyes, so what are you going to say? Yes, it cannot pull dummy. Let's say a cow is supposed to have two eyes, I think. So the cow has three eyes, so it's considered as if it only had one eye. So if one eye is not a trefa, that's not a problem. But on other organs, sometimes if it would be missing an organ and has a duplicate of the organ, so then you would say, yes, it cannot pull dummy. If you have an extra organ, it's considered as if you would be missing. So usually you assume that's a biological statement, but the Rambam has that expression by the Sefer Torah, Yiter Isachas. Not only Chasar Isachas is possible, if there's an extra letter, Yiter Isachas is also possible because yes, it cannot hold on. So if you have a Sefer Torah that has the trup, has something else written in it, has the trup and has the Nekudas, so the way it's now, it's possible. But then the Nisei Kelim say that even if you'll erase the trup and the Nekudas, the Sefer Torah is possible. Why? Now it's not missing any, now there's no longer any yesek in Ataldami. So the Mefarshim explain that we have Torah Shebichzav, we have Torah Shebal Peh. Sometimes you have a pre-exiv, it's written one way, and you're supposed to pronounce it differently. So if you're going to put in the trup in the Nekudas, if the Sefer Melech HaTchila wrote the Sefer Torah with the trup and with the Nekudas, he put in the Torah Shebal Peh. He didn't write it as Torah Shebichzav. He put in the Torah Shebal Peh into the Torah Shebichzav. So even if you erase the extra simonim of the Nekudas in the trap, and now you're left only with the Torah Shebichzav, it's no good, it's not acceptable, because he meant it lahatchila not to be written as the Sefer Torah, meant it to be written as the Torah Shebal Peh, which is not proper. So my impression was that would apply to Megillah Esther also. Megillah Esther is supposed to be from Kisvei HaKodesh, it's part of the Tanakh. So if you go to put in, if the Sefer planned to put in the trup with the Nekudas, I would think that even if you'll erase it later, it won't be good. But let's say a Sefer wrote a Sefer Torah normal, and then 50 years later, the Balkari does know how to lane. So he puts in the trup in the Nekudas. I remember in Philadelphia, I was born in Pennsylvania. So for a few years, we lived in Philadelphia. So there was one shul where the rabbi was a kohen, and he didn't get along with the shamus in the shul. So he refused to take an aliyah, because the shamus was the bakari. For years and years, the rabbi was a kohen, Rabbi Cohen, and he never took an aliyah. And after the shamus passed away, then they got a new bakari. So then the rabbi took aliyah. So he saw the bakari was a character. He never prepared the kriya. So he wrote in pencil the trup and the nekudas and the whole Sefer Torah. So after the Balkari passed away, they got a new Balkari, so they erased all of the trup and the Nekudas, and then they'll be kosher. If it wasn't planned out in advance by the Sefer to write the trap in the Nekudus, someone added it later. So Kozman that has the trap in the Nekudus, it's possible because Yitra Reisachas, yes, it cannot hold on. But once you erase it, then it's Chozer L'Kashrus, because originally it was written well. So that din of Yesek Yenapaldam, if you have an extra letter, it passes like a missing letter, that din doesn't apply to Megillah Esther, because the Gemara says Megillah Esther, even if you're missing a word here and there, a letter missing there, as long as right, as long as 51% of the Megillah is written properly, you say Ruba Kukulai, you say Ruba Kukulai on two levels. Number one, that the Megillah is kosher. Number two, that the Kriya, you're only laning 51% in Tachaksa, 49% you're saying from memory. Because the words are missing, the letters and the words are missing. So we say Ruba Kukul on two levels, and to be Machsha, the Chefs of the Megillah, as the Hechsher of Kisri HaKadosh, and you say that that the Kriya can be Roy, but the Kriya can be Bitoch HaKsav, even if the Miut is Valpeh. That's what they did, is let's say they made an announcement here that if someone misses a word or two in the Megillah, say it from the Chumash that's in front of you. But you have to hear everything in order. So up until this pasuk, I heard everything from the Baal Kedarah. And then I say one pasuk from the printed Chumash, that's considered Baal Peh. If it's not written Behechsher and Klaf, then I say for Shalom, then it's called Kriya Baal Peh. So you can have, if the Reiva, the Kriya is Mentoch HaKsav, the Meat is Baal Peh, so that's okay. So that's what it says. The Mechaber writes in Hilchas Purim, if you have a Megillah where someone wrote in the Trup, or someone wrote in the Nekudas, you can learn from such a Megillah. Why? Because what are you going to say? Yes, it cannot tell dummy. But even if it's not, even if you have a lot of letters missing, a lot of words missing, as long as Rav is written, the whole Megillah is written. But the Halacha says, yes, it cannot tell dummy. If you have an extra word, it's considered as if you miss. Then it's safe that there are Chasar Isachas passes. But in the Megillah, Chasar Isachas doesn't pass. So it is Nichtav Ruba. You're reading everything with Tachaksam, so it would be good. Yeah, so my impression was that that's only what the Mechaber writes. If you have a Megillah with a trup and the Nekudas were written, it's kosher. It means it's b'di'evit, it's kosher. But l'chatchila, you shouldn't do that. L'chatchila, it's not right. Kol's mandara has the trup. It's like you put in the Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Ksav is not supposed to have the Torah Shebal Peh put in. Let's say you have a Kriya Ksiv. You have a few Kriya Ksivs in the Megillah Esther also. You're not supposed to put the... In the printed Chumash, you have the Ksiv, and then you have a parenthesis what the Kriya is. But if you have a Megillah and they put in the Kriya and the Ksiv, that's not right. It's not supposed to put in the Torah Shebal Peh tradition. It's supposed to just have the Torah Shebal Ksav. So I thought it's not right. It's not right. But the Yevit, if someone put in, so the Mechaber says that you can learn from it, but it's not right l'chatchila to put it in. I wasn't so keen about the Be'er Heitiv quotes from the Be'er Sheva, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes that, and the Chayodim quotes that. That if the Baal Kari does know the trap, or he does know the Nekudas, so he can write in, he can do the Chatchila. He can write in the trap and the Nekudas into the Megillah. I thought that that's questionable. I thought that that's not right. Kolzman, that is, if the Sefer put it in Mel Chatchila, so even if you erase it, it says in the Yeridah that it's no good, because it was written improperly, it was written intending to put in the whole Torah Shabbat Peh, but even if someone else wrote it in later on, it's also not right l'hatchila. I thought it was better to learn without trap, better to mispronounce a couple of words here and there. It's not going to be Mishana so Inyan. I thought it's better to learn with a few errors here and there rather than to put in. Anyway, that was a shayla that was asked this year. I never heard that shayla before, that they should put in l'hatchila. Serious people were asking, they should put in the trap and then a kudus and pencil in the session. Okay, so maybe we'll open the floor for things that you want to hear about. That's what I was interested in. I want to hear what you're interested in.
Yeah, so thank you to everyone for sending questions. We literally got dozens of questions. We appreciate all of them, and we'll try to get through as many as we can. So the first question is kind of two questions. Can you argue under Rishonim in the Farshim that seems to have been proven wrong scientifically or archaeologically, or should we assume that there's a Masorah or Das Torah? Moreover, kind of separately, can you disagree with the region or after on a Sfara? Let's say we see something that's Sfira or something that doesn't make sense. Or can we disagree with the Sfara? Or should we assume, let's say, those that you were just talking about? We don't have the right to question that.
Can you disagree with the Gemara if the Gemara bases a din on a certain fact, and we know scientifically that the fact is not true. That's a big question. When Louis Pasteur proved that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, so then there was a big issue. What do you do? There's a Gemara Masechet Shabbos that Horeges Hakina is mutar l'chatchila to kill lice on Shabbos because they're simple pshat in the Gemara, because they're spontaneously generated. So it calls man that they believed in spontaneous generation, so you understand the Gemara. It's a different kind of chiyus, so it's not called entilus neshama. But if the Louis Pasteur proved there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, so what do you do with that din in the Gemara? So I think the first one who wrote about it was Rabbi Yitzchak Lamprenti. He wrote it in its encyclopedia that's called Pachad Yitzchak. He was a Talmud Chacham from Italy. So he raises the issue, should we no longer follow that din in the Gemara? Or should we reject what Louis Pasteur said? Or should we reinterpret the Gemara? We should say that the Gemara meant something else, or maybe they had a tradition that it's mutter to kill a kina, and the reason that the Gemara gave is incorrect, but maybe it's a different explanation. So I think it's usually assumed that the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach assumed like this, that we reinterpret the Gemara, that it doesn't mean it's spontaneously generated, it means it looks like it's spontaneously generated. It's not noticeable to the naked eye that it's born from eggs. It looks as if it's spontaneously generated, so that's what it means. Okay. So that's, what do you do if you have other dinim and you can't reinterpret? What do you do if you have a din that's based on a fact that just doesn't correspond to reality? That's a serious problem. That is a serious problem. Our Torah is a Torah semes. If it doesn't correspond to reality, then the din is wrong. You have to throw out the din. But you have to think more than once. You have to think more than twice. Rav Soloveitchik used to, every couple of years, the yeshiva used to have a Chag HaSnicha. They used to celebrate every 2 years, every 3 years, every 4 years. So he used to celebrate the boys who got smicha, the parents would come. So the main speaker always used to be Rav Soloveitchik. Dr. Belkin was officially the Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Soloveitchik was just a Magid Shia here. He wasn't the Rosh Yeshiva. So Dr. Belkin was officially Rosh Yeshiva, so he would speak for 5-10 minutes. He was not a good public speaker. He was a good fundraiser. He was a Talmid Chacham, but he was not a good public speaker. And then he would give over the podium to Rav Soloveitchik. He would always deliver a major address, at least an hour, every Chag HaSmicha, the whole droshen. So on one occasion, Rav Soloveitchik was speaking in the Chag HaSmicha that we shouldn't rush to change any dinim in the Gemara, because of the science. The scientists may change their mind in another 5 years. And the Gemara is going to be lasting around the dinim, and the Gemara is going to be here for a long, long time. And the science may change their mind. Okay, they shouldn't rush. But if you have a din that doesn't correspond to what it says, it doesn't correspond to reality, so you can't have such a din. If it's not correct, it's not correct. In Shulchan Aruch, there's a machlokes by Mesa Baneha Machmas Mila. If a woman has two boys and they both died after the bris, they have to be concerned. Maybe there's hemophilia in the family. And if she has a third boy, she shouldn't be mal the boy. Not only if the same woman has two boys and they died after the bris, do you have to be concerned? Let's say they're two sisters. And the two sisters, each one lost a boy after bris mila. So it's also a suffix. Maybe there's hemophilia. What if you have two brothers? So that's a machlekes, the mechab and the ramah. Whether you assume hemophilia only runs in the women or it runs in the men also. So scientifically, they say it does not run in the men. Only it's carried by the women, not carried by the men. So that's a machlokes, the mechab and the ramah. The ramah says the wrong way. So that doesn't make any sense. So we should all, the Ashkenazim, should all follow the mechab. I mean, they have a way to test now whether the baby has hemophilia. Now they have tests. You don't have to guess. Years ago, they had to guess. So if a din is based on an error, you just don't observe that din. That's what I tell over the story. I remember when I was a student in college, so there was a British philosopher by the name of Bertrand Russell. So one of the students in my class had Bertrand Russell put out quite a few books on philosophy. So he put out one book, A Dictionary of Philosophy. So I was wondering, what is the dictionary? What's a dictionary of philosophy? So I opened it up. One of my classmates had it. So I looked at the first page, and every letter of the alphabet, he has at least one word, and he has a cartoon. So under the letter A, he has arithmetic. He has a galach with a collar backwards. The Galach is teaching young children arithmetic. So he writes on the blackboard, 1 + 1 + 1 = 1, because they believe in the Trinity. And he says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Echad. So 1 + 1 + 1 = 1. But it doesn't correspond to reality. 1 + 1 + 1 = 1. It's a Trinity. It's 3. So in our religion, the religion doesn't believe in the things that are contradicted. It has to correspond. The halacha corresponds to reality. When you talk about trefet kelim, b'liyas kelim, there really is a bli and a kli. And if you have kelim that are not b'liyas, so there's no b'liyas. So there's no din of hagolas kelim. All the things in our Torah have to correspond to reality. If it's keneged, if it's not true, then it's just not true. Even if it's a mishnah and a gemara, if it's based on an error, so you don't follow it. There was a Hungarian big Talmud Chacham. He was the first great grandson of the Chassam Sofer to be named after the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer's name was Moshe Sofer, Moshe Schreiber. He was a Yekke, but he had a Rabbanus in Hungary, and all of his descendants were Hungarians. So this great grandson, he called the name of the Sofer is called Dor Revi. He's the fourth generation, the great grandson of the Chassam Sofer, and the first one to be named Moshe. He was a rabbi in Kloisenberg. And then he was a big Zionist. That's why the Satmar Rebbe used to say he was an apikoros. But by definition, whoever's a Zionist is an apikoros. I don't think he was an apikoros. He has a couple of wild things that I wouldn't agree to, but it does make him an apikoros because he has wild ideas. Everybody has wild ideas. This the Rebbe in the yeshiva used to say, every human being has mishigas. The Ramam, he wouldn't say this in class. He said it at home with his children. But one of his sons was a friend of mine. So the Rebbe said, every human being has Mishigasin. Rashi had Mishigasin, Rabbi Natam, the Rama had Mishigasin. You don't call him a Mishugana. The Mishugana is the one who collects everybody's Mishigasin. We have a lot of people like that. Okay. So this Dor Revi has a Sefer on Chulin. Last year when we were learning Chulin, so we used the Sefer Dor Revi. It's an interesting modern thinker, very modern approach. And he has a long hakdama to the Sefer on Chulin, where he discusses about the transmission of the Torah Shebaal Peh from generation to generation. He has a lot of original ideas. So one of his original ideas is highly questionable. He says if the Tanoim developed the din, and at the time that they developed the din, it was already known in the world that it's not correct. It was based on a piece of information that's incorrect. So that din is not binding. That din is a mistake. But if the whole world of science thought that that was correct at that time and we discovered in a later generation that it's incorrect, then you don't throw out the din. I don't see why it makes a difference. Whether it was known at the time that they said the din, it was only discovered later. I don't think it's correct. If it's discovered later that it's not true, it's not true. We shouldn't rush to throw out the din. As Rabbi Soloveitchik said, the Torah is going to be around for a long, long time. And the scientists may change their minds. But if you see they're not changing their minds, then you have to either reinterpret the din or you throw out the din. You can't follow a din that's incorrect. Then there was another question he wanted to know. Do we have a right to disagree with the Ktais? Do we have a right to disagree with the Rishonim? Do we have a right to disagree with the Gaonim? So this is in Chosha Mishpat, in Simen Chav Hei. There's a sugya in Sanhedrin about Tor B'Shikal Adas. If a bezin gave a psak, and they passed in Reuben Oshim and $1,000, and he paid the money, and then it turns out that they realized that they made a mistake in psak. So sometimes they can ask Shimon to give back the money to Reuben. What if Shimon is not here? Sometimes they have a right to ask him to give back money, sometimes not. A lot of details. So that's the Gemara says a difference, and Shulchan Aruch has a long discussion. Sometimes it'll be taught by Dvar Mishnah. They made an open mistake, an obvious mistake. It's against the Beferish Adin. Sometimes Torah B'Shikul Adas, not so clear that they made a mistake. So the Ramah there in Simen Chav Hei quotes the following. The Ramah lived in the 1500s. He's quoting this from an earlier poskim, from the 1300s, that what if a person is convinced that there's a psak from the Gaonim, Tshuvas Hagaonim, and the person is convinced that it's not correct. But we don't have anybody in writing. No one else. It's the first time anybody ever challenged the psak of the Gaonim. So there are more quotes from the earlier poskim. It's a risky thing to say they made a mistake. You better consult contemporaries of yours to hear what do they say. So if you present your argument to your contemporaries and they think that you are right, and you prove it, and they seem to agree with you, then he says you have a right to disagree even with the Gaonim. Not only can you disagree with the Gzais, it's one of the Achrayim, have a right to disagree with the Rishonim, have a right to disagree with the Gaonim. So if you have a right to disagree, so you can disagree with the Gemara also. So he says, no, you can't disagree with the Gemara. That's the Gemara in Bav Metzi, around Daf Pei Vav, Pei Hei, Pei Vav. The Gemara makes a statement that there was a Sefer Shel Adam HaRishon. As the same parsha as Bereshit, Zeh Sefer told us Adam. So the Pashup Shat and the Pasuk means that the Chumash is a history book of mankind. So the Gemara says the Chumash is a history book of mankind, very poorly written. If it's a history book, everything is out of order. It's missing a lot of background. How can it be a history book of mankind? The Gemara says it doesn't mean that. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed all the Marishan, Dor Dor V'Dorshav, Dor Dor V'Sofrav, Dor Dor V'Chachamav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed all the Marishan all what's going to happen in all the future generations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pulling the strings behind the scene and seeing to it that everything should come to the result that he wants. The Torah should be developed the way he wants it, and history should be developed the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it. We look at the world now, we don't understand why is this, the world is just ready to destroy itself. The world is falling apart. This is what the Rebbe Shlom is leading history of mankind to this. We don't understand it. Okay. So the Gemara has a few lines from this Sifra Shalada Marishan. So one of the lines is that Rabina Ravashi Sefer Roh. Rabbi Ravashi was the end of the Tkufa of the Gemara. What's the significance of that statement? So the Vilna Gaon on that Raman, he said that's what that line means. That the Torah Shebaal Peh was always transmitted Baal Peh. Even after Rabbi Yudanasi edited the Mishnayos, they were still reciting Mishnayos Baal Peh. They weren't learning Mishnayos from a written text. Rabbi Yudanasi edited how they should say it Baal Peh. And it really wasn't written down. That's how it's assumed. Most of the Achrayim, most of the history books assume like that. What is this? That the Mishnayos were not written down to the days of Rabbeinu Rav Ashi. And therefore, those who came after Rabbeinu Rav Ashi have al pi din a lower level of Balei HaMasorah. So people who were belong to the same category of Balei Masorah, let's say, can an Amora disagree with the Tana? So the Gemara always makes a Tiyufta. How can the Amora make such a statement? You see, all the Tanaim don't agree with it. Nobody agrees with them. Gemara says Tiyufta. So the Ramban writes in one place that the Amoraim Alpidin have a right to Kesel. Mishnah writes like that. Amoraim have a right to disagree with that Tanaim. Alpidin, from the days of Yishuv Benun until the days of Rabbi and Ravashi, everybody had the same level of Chachmei HaMasorah. Masorah means the Torah Shebaal Peh is transmitted orally. After the days of Rabbeinu Rav Ashi, that they used to learn Mishnayos mitoch haksav, from a text, so that there's still Masorah. Now the Gemara is printed, now everything is printed. So, but we still have a Masorah, but it's a lower level of Chachmei HaMasorah. So those who belong to the lower level of Chachmei HaMasorah have no right to disagree with the Pesach that was developed by those who have the higher level of Masorah. That's why the Rambam in the beginning of the Mishnah Torah gives you 40 generations. 1, 2, 3 goes till 38, 39, 40. From Moshe Kibbutz Tamisim Mitzrayim Yeshua, and generation to generation till he gets to Rabbeinu Rav Ashi and he stops. Why did he stop? He could have gone further. The Meiri in the beginning of Pirkei Avos goes till he received the Torah from his father got it from so-and-so. He goes all the way back to Rabbeinu Rav Ashi. Why didn't the Rambam do that also? The Rambam could have written also Hemshech after Rabbeinu Rav Ashi till his own day. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik explained, because Al Pidin, that was the end of the real full Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh, when the Torah Shebaal Peh is being transmitted Baal Peh. So that's what it means. That's what it means. That line in the Sefer Shel Adam HaRishon, Rabbeinu Rav Ashi, Soif HaRoah, that's the end of the period of the Iker Masorah of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So anybody in that Kufa, from the days of Yishuv Benun until Rabbeinu Rav Ashi, they have a right to disagree with each other. Al Pidin, they're on the same level of Chachmei HaMasorah. Not such a smart idea to disagree with Yishuv Benun, because it could be that he heard B'Ferei Shel Moshe Rabbeinu. So what are you disagreeing? So you got to be careful. But on the assumption that he didn't hear it from Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said it on his own, so then Al Pidin, you have the right to disagree with him. You can't argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chumash is called Taras Moshe. So Moshe Rabbeinu has the final say. But people, the Chachmei HaMasar, have a right to disagree with each other. So you wanted to know, can we disagree with the Ktzais? The Nesivis disagrees, but a lot of times with the Ktzais. And then there are others that disagree with the Nesivis and the Ktzais, that disagree with both. In every generation, we don't have any one sefer who always hits the nail on the head, who always has the best pshat. Sometimes the best pshat is in the Ktzais, sometimes the best pshat is in the Nesivis, sometimes the best pshat is in the Pnei Yeshua. Sometimes Ab Chaim doesn't always have the best shot. Sometimes others have the best shot. Sometimes Abjim Mishkap has the best shot. If there would be one Paisik, one Gadol, who always has the best shot, we would have all joined him. Like the different organizations, Mizrahi Agud and the Torah Karta, if one group would always have the truth, everybody would have already joined that group. The answer is everybody has part of the truth. So you always try to pick that organization that you think has more truth than Sheker. And that's hard to determine. But in every generation, people are entitled to their opinion. But a person has to be entitled to an opinion. It has to be a Chacham Shehigiyah Lohiro. They're printing now Kisviyat from the days of the Balei HaTesus that are utterly ridiculous. Foolish Talmidim wrote foolish Shalos HaJewis. They don't know what they're talking about. So I don't know why they're printing this svarim. It's a waste. It's a baltashkes on the paper. That's what the Marshal said on the Migdalois on the bottom of the Rambam. He said the Migdalois, whenever the Rabbit has a hasog against the Rambam, so the Migdalois always said the Rambam is right. The Rambam is against Daphne Gemaris. The Rabbit is asking, the Rambam is against. Well, no, the Migdalois said the Rambam is always right. So the Marshal says the Migdalois was over on baltashkes on the paper. Narish guy. So now they print all these kisviyah. The people alive today who are writing Shalos HaTshuvos who don't know what they're talking about. People lived in the days of the Balei HaTesis didn't know what they were talking about. Unfortunately, in every generation, there are people who think that they're God's gift to the world. They think they're entitled to an opinion. And unfortunately, not everybody's entitled to an opinion. Even a person has smicha from Yeshiva University. Not everybody who has smicha from Yeshiva is entitled to an opinion. On a halachic issue, you have to be a chacham shegiya lo'hira. If a person is a chacham shegiya lo'hira, then he's entitled to an opinion. But Moshe Feinstein said there was a certain Hungarian rabbi who attacked a lot of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's chulas. Moshe Feinstein's sefer is called Igris Moshe. So this person wrote a book, Manal Igris, the response to the Igris Moshe. He disagrees a lot with Rabbi Moshe. So Rabbi Moshe was very hurt when they printed that sefer. And he said, I don't know if I'm entitled to an opinion at all. But Rabbani keep on pressuring me. They want to know my opinion. If I am entitled to an opinion, I have to express my honest to goodness opinion, even if it's a disagreement with the Nadi Behuda, even if it's a disagreement with the Chassam Sofer and with the Shach and with the Ktzais. A lot of times Rabbi Moshe disagrees with classical Paschim. So he said, maybe I'm not entitled to an opinion, but if I am, then I'm obligated to give my honest to goodness opinion, even if it's a disagreement with those who preceded me. You're not allowed to give in because it says in Shulchan Aruch like that. That's how Rab Chaim Valozhiner writes in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that one who is convinced that the Shulchan Aruch paskin wrong, and he paskins like the Shulchan Aruch, because that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, in Zayvan of Lav in Chumash, it says, Nasisa Pnei Gadol. If you have a din Torah between two people, and one of them is a president at the shul, and one of them is a rabbi, one is a balabas, and you favor the president, or you favor the rabbi, because he's a more important person than the other. That's a separate law. Here you're paskin like the Mechaber because he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. But if you're convinced that he's wrong, the Vilna Gaon was often convinced that the Shulchan Aruch is wrong. It's hard for us to say we're so convinced. We don't know so much Gemara. How can we be so convinced? But if a person really is so convinced that something is wrong, and he's a Chach Mishigir L'Arad, then he's not allowed to paskin like that because the Shulchan Aruch says so, because the Shach says so. If you think it's wrong, you're not allowed to paskin like that. A din has to be an honest to goodness din. It has to correspond to reality. It has to correspond to what you think the din is. That was one question. Okay.
The next question is, how do you deal with and relate to parents or family members who aren't knocking on all the bell buttons? Example given is, you're home for Shabbos and you say, look, Matthew's out of order, and they think you're crazy or you're radical. How do you deal with family members like that?
Parents, there's a mitzvah of kibud av v'aim, even if the parents are not so learned. Now, there's a famous line from Mark Twain. He says when he was a teenager, he thought his parents are so stupid. These old parents are so stupid. And then he got older and he matured. So then he understood better. So he says, wow, my parents steiged a lot in the last couple of years. The parents didn't steig a lot. The parents stayed the same. It just he realized that he was misjudging them. A lot of times we're not misjudging the parents. Parents taka don't know. Parents don't know. A lot of times the children think the parents don't know anything. And they do know. A lot of times we're not misjudging the parents taka don't know. So the parent, there's a din of kibbut aviyen. So the Gemara says, you're not allowed to bop them over the head and say, you're doing against the din. You have to say, I think the din is like this. And you have to say, we learned the nishiv. You have to say it in a nice way. And if they're not prepared to listen, so what can you do? But at least you should observe the din. If they're going to consider you, what is that, radical? They're going to consider you extreme. So observe the din when they're not watching. Okay, don't do it in their presence. You have to be, you have to realize that not everybody is so knowledgeable. So sometimes parents do not know the dinim. You have to try to impress upon them that you're learning in the yeshiva. Maybe start a seder with the parents and learn kitzur shulchan aruch at the table. So some people, or some learned people do that. Some learned families, but it's talmid chacham. They learn kitzur shulchan aruch at the Shabbos table. Instead of talking about philosophy and talking about the parasha is not too relevant. Learn kitzur shulchan aruch, not straight. Learn the dinim that are relevant. So they'll see that you're not making up things from thin air. You're reading from the kids of Shulchan Aruch. Not easy.
How should we approach failure? And I guess as a follow-up to that, or as an additional question, what should we do if we struggle with our self-confidence and our self-esteem? Do we have any advice?
There's a Medrash. The Medrash says that the world that we live in was not the first world that God created. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world, then he destroyed it. He didn't like it. Then he created another world. He didn't like that. Then he created another world. He created many worlds, one after the other, until he finally created this world. He said he likes it. So the Medrash doesn't make any sense. A human being has chalomus. I'm going to marry this kind of a girl. We're going to have so many children. We're going to live in a beautiful home near a river. It's going to be like this. He imagines in his mind what it's going to be like. And then Lamaisa, he gets married. That's not the girl that he was dreaming about. And the children aren't the way he was dreaming. And the house that he lives in is not exactly the same. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Whatever his ruts and words, if he wanted to create a beautiful world, it would be a beautiful world. So what do you mean? He created a world and he said he's not happy with it, so he destroyed it, then he created another world. And the Chumash also, even leaving out what it says in the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Borei Olamos HaMachribim, created many worlds and he destroyed them till he finally made the world as it is now. The Chumash we don't understand. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu said Yihiyor Vayihiyor Vayar Kli Mesor Kitov. He said, oh, it turned out good. Every day it says Kitov. Monday it doesn't say, so Tuesday it says twice Kitov. So what do you mean kitov? What do you mean? So the Ramban asked, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be beautiful, it's going to be beautiful. He wanted it to be look like a sloppy mess. Whatever he wanted, that's what it's going to be. So what do you mean? He's passing judgment that it turned out the way he imagined. Whatever he wanted, that's what's going to happen. So the Ramban gives a different shot over there. The Rasha Leitchik used to say that what does the Medrash mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the worlds. So you have Rashi in his commentary on Chumash, quotes from the Tanoim, and says, rested on Shabbos. What do you mean he rested? Human beings work their heads off. People go to work and they get exhausted. So you need a day of rest. You have to relax. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just, he has a wish that animals should come into existence and plants should come into existence and bodies of water. Whatever his wish is will happen. Below le ushach le, we say in the piyutim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. He didn't have to work hard. So what does he mean? Yom Shri Shabbos, Vayin Afash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested on Shabbos. The Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, Hichti v'yatzma menucha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu, write that I rested on Shabbos because I gave the Jewish people a mitzvah v'halach to bedrocha, that everybody was created the Tzelem Elokim. And in order to preserve, we have an obligation to preserve that Tzelem Elokim. So the way to preserve it is to learn Tanakh and to know what are the ways of Hashem, what are Darchei Hashem. And v'halach v'bedrocha, if we'll go in the ways of Hashem, this will be the method to preserve the Tzelem Elokim that we have. That's how the next pasuk continues. We're all kalami horitz. And all the nations of the world will see Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha, that the Jewish people have succeeded in preserving their Tzelem Elokim. Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha, you preserved their Tzelem Elokim. They were also created with Tzelem Elokim. The Goyim were also created with Tzelem Elokim. The Yorumi Mekel, they will learn from you how to lead their lives with Yerushalayim also. They can also go in the ways of Hashem. We have an obligation to go in the ways of Hashem and to serve as Orla Goyim. And Orla Goyim as far as what? Orla Goyim as far as Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha, that's only for the Jews. That's not for the Nochrim. It means we should be an Orla Goyim with respect to this. What is Tzelem Elokim? They should see how a human being can preserve its Tzelem Elokim, and they can do the same. So Rav Soloveitchik thought that just like Rashi quotes from the Tanaim, Hichtiv b'yatzma menucha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu, write that I rested on Shabbos. It's not true, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't rest, but it's not a lie. In a certain sense, he wasn't creating. He was creating Yesh Me'ayin and Sheshes Mei Bereshis. Then after the first 6 days, not that he created for 6 days and he rested on the seventh day, that he created 6 days. He doesn't keep on creating 6 days and resting on the seventh day. From the sixth, from the end of the sixth day on, it doesn't create any more Yesh Me'ayin. From now on, he only makes Yesh Me'yesh. But why is it? Why did he dictate the Chumash to Moshe Rabbeinu like that? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed Bnei Yisrael b'halachta b'drocha, we should preserve our Tzelem Elokim. So he had Moshe Rabbeinu write in the Chumash that resting on Shabbos is part of the activities of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we should know that we should do that too. We should take a day off. Rav Soloveitchik said he thinks that that's the same regarding these midrashim. The midrashim learn out from the psukim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and he didn't like it. He destroyed it. He created another world. Hichta biyatzma, failure. Even though whatever he wanted, that's what's going to happen. So if he wanted a beautiful world, it'll come out a beautiful world. He hichta biyatzma, that he created the world and he destroyed it, created to teach us the lesson. That even if at first we are a failure, we should try a second time. And if we fail a second time, try a third time. Human beings are not going to be greater than the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ribbono Shel Olam himself was a failure a lot. Yeah, nobody wants to be a failure, but we should realize that that's the human condition. Human beings, you don't want to be the only failure. If you have a Tzoras Rabim, you see other people are failing also. Like now, a lot of people are losing their jobs. Millions of people are losing their jobs because of this corona sickness. So it's a Tzoras Rabim is a Chatzi Necham. If only one person is a failure, he feels he's the only one. The whole world is collapsing on him. But if you keep your eyes open, you see it's difficult times. It's not so easy to be successful. A lot of people are failing. So you shouldn't feel so bad. And the Ribbono Shel Olam himself describes himself that he failed the first couple of times when he created. He was Borei Olam as a Machriva. So it's difficult to admit failure. I remember there was a student in Yeshiva my time, my age, and he married a very lovely girl. And then they had trouble in the marriage all the years. And the wife always wanted to get divorced for years and years and years. They had a few children. They finally got divorced. He only agreed to divorce the wife if I take care of the get. I don't do gittin. My father used to do gittin in the house. My father did a lot of gittin. So I saw Siddi gittin a lot. So he only insisted he's only going to do the get if I'm Masada the get. So I was Masada the get to my home. And then the husband was crying. Usually the wife is crying when a couple gets divorced. Even if the wife has many degrees and the husband didn't even finish high school, usually the women feel uncomfortable with all the doctorates, with all the degrees that they have. And the wife is earning the money and the husband is not. Usually it's the wife who feels bad. Over here, the husband was crying. It was difficult for him to admit that he made a mistake. All the years, it wasn't a good marriage and it was his fault. And it was hard for him to admit that he made a mistake. It's very difficult to admit failure. But look, a lot of people are not successful and we should realize that we can pull ourselves out of the failure, just like the Ribbono Shel Olam is Borei Olam is Machriv, and we can do the same thing. That's also part of Halachta B'Racha. The Ribbono Shel Olam led us to believe that he was a failure, and he did things over, he corrected it. We can all do tshuva. A failure in business, a failure in marriage, or a failure in doing averis. Person shouldn't talk it into himself that he's so much of a bal avera. It's not shy for him to do tshuva. Everybody can do tshuva. Possible for everybody. No one is an absolute failure. You just have to be prepared to admit that you made a mistake, that you have to do tshuva. Yeah.
Is climate change and protecting the environment the Jewish value? Does it justify major changes to our lives, like changing our diet and changing our houses?
Absolutely is a Jewish value. The Gemara tells a story, I think, in Maseches Tainis. There was an old man who was planting a certain kind of a tree. And that tree doesn't give fruits for the first 10 years. So somebody asked him, you expect to live to the age of 100? You're planting a tree. You're never going to live long enough to get to Paris. And he said, when I was born in the world, that there were these kind of trees that the people in the earlier generations planted. So just like humanity helped me out, I have an obligation to reciprocate. All of the mitzvahs, medalam chavera, are all based on reciprocity. I'm mechayev to do for others because they're mechayev to do back for me. The pasuk says, you're mechayev to give tzedakah to the aniyim because there someday, poverty is a galgal hachayza ba'olam. Right now, I'm very wealthy and my children are very wealthy. 10 generations, we're going to be wealthy. But after 10 generations, maybe my great-great-grandchildren will be poor. And they'll be in need of charity. So I'm obligated to help you out because you and your descendants are obligated to repay the type. Someday I'll need it. The Gemara has like that. If you go to be Menachem Avol, so that by others, then, well, when one will be an Avelis, they'll be a Menachem Avol by him. If you go to be Mevakeh Ochela by others, they'll be nice enough to reciprocate. Everyone will reciprocate be Menachem Avol by him. If Mevakeh Ochela by you. If you go to dance at other people's weddings, they'll come to dance at your weddings. Whatever you do for others, others will do back for you. So it's not only an obligation, this particular person. Mankind did for us, so we're mechuyev to do for mankind, for the next generation. Yeah, sure, mechuyev. We should change. If changing the diets will help, whatever we can do, that the world shouldn't be destroyed. We should have, the world should be a pleasant place to live in. Like this, we're going to destroy the whole world, and then we're going to give this mess of a world. We came into a world that wasn't so bad. Then we're going to leave a world for our grandchildren that's going to be awful. It's going to be so much pollution and so much the weather. We're changing the weather. We're destroying the whole world. It's not right. We have an obligation to all of mankind not to destroy the world. That it should be a pleasant place to live in for them too, not just for us. I think so.
How does Rebbe understand the idea that in the future, aside from the Hamishah Chum Shei Torah, only the Vels Esther will remain a part of that? What's the significance of that given its status?
In the end of Parshas Mishpatim, we have the rest of the story of Maimon HaSina that began in Parshas Yisrael. And the Gemara learns that all the laws of Gerus are derived from Maimon HaSina. Maimon HaSina was the Gerus of all of Klal Yisrael. So we learn out that the men have to have if a non-Jewish man wants to convert, he has to have a bris milah. The national bris milah that took place in Eretz Mitzrayim is not only to enable the people to eat the Korban Pesach, that was the beginning of the Gerus. The Gerus was completed 7 weeks later, the Maimon HaSina. So the Gemara says the milah was done in Mitzrayim, then 7 weeks later, everybody went to the mikveh, and the Chumash only says the married people went to mikveh. It doesn't say whether the single people had to go to mikveh. But the Gemara reads it in between the lines, as the Gemara increases, explains that the single people also, everybody had to go to mikveh for the gerus. Then at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, it says they brought karbonis, that's a din of ger. A ger b'zman hazeh, the Gemara learns that from the pasuk, the karbon is not miyakev. But those gerim who will still be alive at the time that the third Beis HaMikdash will be built will be obligated to bring a karbon ha-ger. B'zman she Beis HaMikdash ha-yakayim. The ger is obligated to bring a carbon. He's almost the full ger even without the carbon. It's only missing a very small percentage of the gerus. He's not permitted to eat a carbon shlamim. Kozman, he doesn't bring the carbon ager. That's the only thing that's missing. And then, of course, the main part of the gerus is the kabbalas on mitzvahs. You can't have a ger without kabbalas on mitzvahs. There was some professor in Eretz Yisrael who came up with a big chiddush that the requirement for kabbalas on mitzvahs for the ger was invented in the 1850s by the Charlemagne. That's ridiculous. What? You don't need Kabbalah Sanitz. That's what Geirus is all about, Kabbalah Sanitz. A non-Jew wants to convert. He has Mila and Tvila, and he brings a carbon. He doesn't believe in the Jewish religion, doesn't commit himself to keep mitzvahs. It's worthless. The Geirus is not Chal. They're absolutely not Chal. So all the dinim are learned out from Maimon Hasin. But there's one din that's not learned out from Maimon Hasin. It says in the end of Mishpatim, Moshe Rabbeinu read from the Sefer HaBris. What is the Sefer HaBris? So Rashi in his commentary, Achumish quotes from the Tanroim. Sefer HaBris is HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu from Bereishis till the end of Yisro. That was the Sefer HaBris. So apparently, we don't have that. But we have Gerim, Rabbi Rum, teaches here in the Yeshiva, Rabbi Tzvi Rum. He's involved in the Manhattan Beslin. The Rabbinical Council of America has 11 Bate Dinim all around America who take care of Gerus. So Rabbi Rum runs the Beslin in Manhattan for Gerus. So every week he takes care of another Gerus. We don't learn from a Sefer Torah after a person converts. Why not? If all the dinim are learned out from Maim HaSinai, the Mila and the Tvila and the Kabbalah on Mitzvahs and the Karbon, so why not learn out Sefer Bris? So apparently the Chachamim understood you only need a Sefer Bris when it's a Kabbalah Sator Ayideh HaTzibur. When the Yochid is Mekabbalah Bris, when the Yochid is Mekabbalah Torah Mitzvahs, you don't need to learn from a Sefer Bris. But the Chachamim had a tradition that on the occasion of Nes Purim, there was a new Kabbalah Satara by the nation. Kimu v'kiblu, it says in the Megillah, says, Kimu mashi kiblu kvar, there was a second Kabbalah Satara. So there was a need for a contract. There was a need for a Sefer HaBris. So the Chachamim understood that the Megillah Esther was written as a Sefer HaBris. The rest of the Svarim in Tanakh, Chumash, Chamish Torahs, original Sefer HaBris on the occasion of Maim HaSinai that Moshe Rabbeinu read from was only from Bereishis till the end of Yisro. But then at the end of the Arbaim Shon on the Midbar, after HaKadosh Baruch had dictated the rest of the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, then Moshe Rabbeinu completed writing everything. He gives it to the Kohanim B'nei Levi. So he looked there in the Pesukim at the end of Chumash Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu tells him, from now on, this is the Sefer HaBris. No longer a shortened Sefer HaBris just from Bereishis till the end of Yisro. Sefer HaBris is the Chamish Chumashit Torah. And then on the occasion of Kimu B'Kiblu, after Nes Purim, there's a new Sefer HaBris, and that was the Megillah Esther. So that's what the Gemara has a din. The Rambam has a din. The Rambam interprets it in the Gemara. Let's say you have Chamish Chumashit Torah, B'Kricha Achas, together with Nevi'im Uksuvim. You have the whole Tanakh B'Kricha Achas. So there's a machlekes hatanoim in the end of the first parak and Baba Basra. Is it permissible to do that? We paskin, it is permissible. Why does one tana hold it's not permissible? We paskin, it is permissible, but the Rambam says it won't have the kedusha of a sefer Torah. Why not? And you can't learn kriyas haTorah. It's like learning, let's say this week is parshas tetzaveh. So you can't learn from a cleft that only has parshas tetzaveh. That's called kriya bal peh. It's only kriya meterach haksaveh if you have a sefer shalom. So what if you have a Sefer Shmos? Sefer Shalom, the whole Sefer Shmos, and you're going to learn Tetzaveh. So that's a Shaila in the Gemara in Gittin. Can you learn from a Sefer? It's called a Chumash. We call a Chumash a printed Chumash, but in the Gemara, Chumash means Sefer Shmos is written on a cloth properly, but it's only Shmos, it's not the Chamishu Chumashitur. So the Gemara says it's Kriyam Etor Chaksav, but it's not a Sefer HaBris. So if they cover that Tzibur, since the Kriyas is Bris, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made, he made the bris with the tzibur, didn't make a bris with yechidim. So when you're laying kriyas haTorah b'tzibur, you have to use a sefer bris. You have to use a sefer Torah. So the Rambam says, if you have sefer Torah nevi'im uksuvim all together, then you say, yes, it cannot hold on me. Just like if you have an extra letter in the sefer Torah, it's like a letter is missing. So the other sefer Yeshua Shoftim is not sefer bris. That's Torah shebichsav. It's Tanakh Kisvei HaKodesh, but it's not sefer bris. Only the Chamishu Chumashit Torah Megillah Esther sefer bris. So if you have the whole Tanakh together, that pulls down the level of Kedusha of the Sefer Torah, because yes, it cannot hold on me, so it pulls it down to the lowest common denominator. So the Sefer Torah, the Chamishu Chumashit Torah, doesn't have the status of the Sefer HaBris, because yes, it cannot, has a status like Kisvei HaKodesh, has a status like a Chumash. The Rambam says he can't learn from it. That's the Pashtus, why there was one Tana in the end of the first parak and Baba Basra, I think Rav Meir. His only opinion, you can't write Sefer Torah Nevi Mitzvah Mekricha Achas, because the Sefer Torah won't have a level of Kedusha Sefer Torah. It'll have the level of Kisvei HaKodesh. That's a bizoyant to the Sefer Torah. We paskin it is mutter to write it, Mekricha Achas, but it won't have the status of the Sefer HaBrit. So the Gemara has such exactly the same din by Megillas Esther. If you lay Megillas Esther b'tzibur, if you have 10 people together laying b'tzibur, then you have to lay from the Sefer HaBrit. So what if you have all the five Megillas together? B'kricha achas, you have Echa, Shirashirim, Koheles, Esther, and Ruth, everything all together. The other four Megillas are not Sefer HaBrit. Only Megillas Esther is Sefer HaBrit. I say, yes, it cannot pull down. Since the others are not Sefer HaBrit, it pulls down the level of the Megillas Esther. So it's not a Sefer HaBrit. So it's Kriya Mitoch Haksav. So for Kriya B'tzibur, you have to have a Sefer HaBrit. Because the bris at Har Sinai, the bris on the Torah was with the Tzibur, and the bris in the days of Kima V'Kibla was with the Tzibur. So when you're laying in Kriyas HaTorah B'Tzibur, every Shabbos, every Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, you have to learn from a Sefer HaBrit. And when you're laying the Megillah B'Tzibur, you have to learn from Sefer HaBrit. Everybody will be, if you're laying from the Gila Aksuva Ben Aksuvim, it's not a Sefer HaBrit. The people will be Yotze B'Torah Yechidim, but they won't be Yotze B'Torah Tzibur. What's an afkamina? The Yotze B'Torah Yechidim. So the Torah Yevon says an afkamina will chab. Where they say Harav is Riven, our practice is we only say the bracha Harav is Riven after the Mikra Megillah if it's a Kriyas HaTorah B'Tzibur. If it's a Kriya B'Yochid, then you don't say. So even if you have 1,000 people, but you're learning from Megillah Haksuva Ben Haksuvim, it's not called the Sefer HaBrit, then you wouldn't say Harav is Riven. So that's why Megillah Esther was singled out. It has the same status like the Chamishu Chumshetur. Not only is it Kisra Kodesh, all the other Kisra Kodesh, according to the way the Rambam understands, the Ravid says that Kisra HaKodesh, the Rambam quotes that Medrash, that Lo Sid Lava, all the swarm will be batal, and the Kisra HaKodesh will only consist of Chamish Shulchan Shetorah and the Megillah Esther. These are the two that are Sefer HaBrit. What's with the rest of the Tanakh? So the Rambam holds, it was a Hiru HaShoah for a few thousand years. It's also called the Hiru HaShoah. It was a Hiru HaShoah for a few thousand years that the Kisra HaKodesh consists of 24 swarm. But Mi'ikar Adin, the Kisra HaKodesh is only the Chamish Shulchan Shetorah and the Megillah Esther, that's all. The rest is just Hiru HaShoah. The Ravid disagrees with that. The Ravid says, no. The Tanakh will always have the 24 Svarim. There's always something to learn from all the Sifri Tanakh, different halachas, different Musa, different things to learn from all the Sifri Tanakh. It means that the others won't be used as much. But the Rambam understood the Medrash Kibshuto, that the whole institution of Tanakh, as we know, it was only intended as a Hiru HaShoah. It's not a Din L'Doros. Din L'Doros only the Chamishu Chamshetor with the Megillah Esther. Interesting idea.
Recently, Israel rescued 25-year-old Elizabeth Modini, who had escaped to Syria and taken prisoner there. Thrice Israel reportedly paid for her return, including the release of two Syrian prisoners, a payment of $1.2 million for Russia to provide a vaccine to their residents. This woman was reported to have tried escaping from Gaza and Jordan multiple times previously. Assuming this report is true regarding the price Israel paid for these women, was this a lawfully correct action on Israel's part with regard to the helpless victim shooting?
I remember many years ago when they started hijacking planes, when the Arabs started hijacking planes. So they hijacked a plane that had a lot of Jews that was on its way to go back to America from Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Huttner was on one of the planes. I think they hijacked two or three planes. So Rabbi Huttner was on one of the planes. And the Rabbi Huttner and the Talmidim and Chaim Berlin were very, Rabbi Huttner used to be the Rosh Yeshiva and Chaim Berlin. So he had a few Talmidim who are very wealthy, who support Torah causes. And they spoke to people in the American government, American administration, that they're prepared to put up a lot of money to redeem Rabbi Huttner from captivity. So the American government told them that they don't negotiate with terrorists. They're not going to do it. But there was a discussion that the Rabbanim had, the European Rabbanim had a discussion. So some of them thought that the Mishnah says you're not allowed to be paid this ashrim yes al kadei de mehem. There used to be a slave market years ago. Lincoln freed the slaves, so we don't have any slave market anymore. But for many generations, till Lincoln freed the slaves, There was in other parts of the world, even after Lincoln freed the slave, there's still a slave market in some countries. So the Mishnah has a din, you're not allowed to pay ransom money to free someone from slavery, from captivity, if they're asking for an exorbitant amount of money. It's too much of a tirchan netzibur. So the Rishonim say over there, but if the person is an outstanding Talmid Chacham and the Jewish community needs them, so then you do pay. You have to give even Yesal Kedei Demei. So some of the Rabbanim are saying that Rabbi Huttner deserves, he was a big Rosh Yeshiva, is very influential, he had a lot of students, so they felt that if not for the fact that the American government said that's their policy, they don't negotiate with terrorists, so they said it would be Kedai, that it is proper that we should put up a lot of money in order to redeem him from the captivity. So they say at that meeting, I was not there. They say at that meeting, Rabbi Yankee Kamenetsky disagreed. And the Rabbanut and Eretz Yisrael has since adopted his position. He said that din of Pidyon Shvuyim only applies if it's peacetime. And pirates are kidnapping people to hold up the community for the ransom money. But if you're in the middle of a war and each side captured soldiers from the other side, you don't do pidyon shvuyim in the middle of a war. You'll be giving money to the other side. You'll be helping. You're helping their war effort if you give money, or you give them. I have, let's say, the Israelis used to swap prisoners, so they had the Arabs had 2 Jewish prisoners, and the Israelis had 4,000 Arab prisoners. So they would give 4,000. Those 4,000 prisoners will become terrorists again. So what kind of a way to run a war is that? You're helping the enemy in the middle of a war. You don't do pidyon shvuyim. But it's officially peaceful now. Rabbi Yankee Kamenetsky said that after Mohammed HaShechrur, the only country that signed a peace agreement was Egypt. At that time, there was only Egypt. And the others never signed a peace agreement. So officially, they're still at war. They don't run the war by shooting guns and tanks and this. They have all the terrorist activity. This is all the hemshech of the old Mechemet HaShechrur. We're not finished with the Mechemet HaShechrur yet. So that's what he timed it. It took many years till the Rabbanut finally adopted that position. So when the government consults the Rabbanut, so they tell them that we're still in the middle of the war in Mechemet HaShechrur. Many of the Arab countries have not agreed to any peace agreement with Israel. And this is the way they're waging a war against tourism in Eretz Yisrael. They want to kill. They're not coming in shooting all the people with tanks and guns and so on, but they send terrorists in, and they're trying to ruin tourism. They're trying to ruin the economy in Eretz Yisrael, trying to give a hard time. This is all a hemshech of the war. So the pashtus is, because of the war situation, it's not right. They shouldn't do it at all. That has been adopted as the policy of the Rabbanut. You're not allowed to do pinyon shvuyim. I think that was scandalous. Why did the woman go to Syria? Well, she wanted to visit Kever Avos or something. I think she was a Sfardish woman, no? I'm shugana. They shouldn't have redeemed her. They shouldn't have redeemed her. She's not all there. They shouldn't have redeemed her.
Have you noticed any trends in the
Talmidim
of
YU
over the past 5 years
pre-COVID? Pre-COVID. My impression is that the learning is much better. It's much better than it was in my time. In my time, we didn't have so many Sfarim in the Beis Medrash. There were hardly any Mishnah Brurahs at all. There weren't so many Shasim. There weren't so many volumes of Shas. I remember one of the chidushim of Rabbi Baron Lichtenstein, Zechana Lebracha, was that he had on his desk, he always had the 4-volume Shas and the 2-volume Rambam. So many of the students saw, you have to. Whenever you learn Gemara with Taisa, Taisa always quotes Gemara from other places. You always have to have a Shas on the table. You have to look up every Gemara that Taisa quotes. Maybe the Gemara doesn't exist. Maybe Rashi has a different Shad. Maybe Rashi has a different Girsa. Who says that the Gemara exists? You always have to check all the Gemaras. Maybe there's a thesis there that explains it better than over here. You have to always look up it all. You have to look at all the thesis and all of the shas to see what thesis means. You can't just rely on what thesis says in Amisichta. Yeah, so this has almost every table in the Beis Medrash has a Shas and a Rambam. I attribute that to Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. Then I think the boys are much more learned now than in my time. That's for sure. They spend more time learning. That's for sure. We didn't learn as much as you do. You didn't have as good Rabbeim as we had. We had better Rabbeim. But the boys now learn. They spend more time learning. So, Achshadara, it's a better generation than in my time. I definitely see that. Yeah.
Is there a halachic
and a
shtab of value
having
friends or a chavra?
Absolutely. Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes Gemaras, the Gemara in different places, that Ein Adayme Yochid, who's doing a mitzvah to the rabbim. If many people are doing a mitzvah together, it has a greater effect than if a Yochid does it. You have to have friends to do Avodas Hashem. The Gemara has Enatar Niknas Ela Bechavrusa. If you have a whole group of people learning together, so the learning will flow better most of the time. Some people just don't lend themselves. The Chazanish couldn't learn with anybody else. He always learned by himself. Some people just can't. But most regular, normal people, and it's true, Enatar Niknas Ela Bechavrusa. You have to have a base medrash. It has to be noisy. When non-Jews in the field of education come into a yeshiva and they hear that racket, it's so noisy. All the boys are learning, screaming out loud. They don't understand how can anybody in a library have to have quiet. How can you have a base manager? Everybody's screaming. So that's why they put in carpets and they put in different things in order that it shouldn't be too noisy. But that's the way a base manager always was. People are successful in learning because it's noisy. Because they can turn to the guy next to them and ask him, what's pshat in this Rashi? What's pshat in this Tosis? And everybody helps out a little bit. He knows pshat. I don't know pshat in a lot of things. This guy knows pshat in the Rashi. He knows pshat in the Tosis. Everybody's mechazik each other and learning. Everybody's mechazik each other in shmiras hamitzvos. Then you need chavrusas to people go through difficulties in life. Not everybody has such an easy life. Some boys have difficulty in shidduchim. Some other people have difficulty with sicknesses. Everybody has problems, difficulty with your parents, with your spouses, with your children, whatever. So you have to have chaverim to support you. We always need support from chaverim. Of course, it's friends is a major Jewish value. Absolutely.
Feels
he has an instinctive nature, plus chooses not to drink in general. Is it different if you would be able to have a shot at simcha or similar occasions? On Shabbos, there is no mitzvah of simcha. It's a question, why do we say yismuchu b'malchuscha on Shabbos if there's no chiv simcha? So there's a long discussion, the Sfechemet quotes a long discussion on that. But the halacha says that Shabbos doesn't cancel avelus, only Yom Tov does, because Avelis and Simchas Yantav are attacked to this asim. Shabbos doesn't cancel Avelis because there's no Chiv Simcha, there's only Chiv Oneg. So Oneg is determined subjectively. So if you don't enjoy eating, so it says in Shulchan Aruch, for those people who enjoy fasting better than eating, I haven't met those people yet, but apparently there are people who enjoy fasting better than eating. So their Oneg Shabbos is defined by fasting on Shabbos. So if you don't enjoy Fleishik, so you don't enjoy wine. So have milchik on Shabbos. If you don't enjoy wine, so don't. But on Yantiv, that it's a chiyuv simcha, so the Ramah raises the question in his commentary on the tour, that's called the Darkei Moshe, on the bottom of the page in the big tour. So the Ramah raises the question, maybe simcha on Yantiv is determined objectively. Maybe there's an objective standard. You have to have basa v'yayin, even if you choke on it, even if you don't enjoy it. So the Ramah sort of comes to that conclusion that Simcha Yontif is not judged subjectively. On Shabbos it says, if a person is aggravated about something and he feels if he'll cry for an hour, he'll get it out of his system and he'll be happier. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, let him cry on Shabbos. And on Yontif, that's a question if you're allowed to cry. So I think they say it's usually assumed that not. They tell the story about the Vilna Gaon. He was taught. On Yontav, they told him that his brother passed away and he didn't cry at all. And then after he said, Havdalah Mitzvah Yontav, he sat down and he cried. Because on Yontav, there's a din of Simcha, and Simcha is determined objective standard for Simcha. So we assume that Basa V'yayin, Basav Yayin is objectively that's defined as simchas. Even a person doesn't enjoy it. He doesn't enjoy the Basav Yayin he should have. You should drink a little bit. The Ramah says you don't have to drink ad leyor. Does mean mamish stone drunk is shikah shigil the shikus of shalot. The Ramah says it means you should drink yosef and limuda more than he usually drinks, and he should take a nap. He should make one drowsy. He should. So many achrayim say he doesn't have to take the nap. It means it makes him drowsy. So that's a similar dove that he drank yosef and limuda. I think the administration told the rabbeim that they cleared it with their lawyers and they're permitted to give all the students a revius of wine tomorrow. More than revius, that's a question. But a revius of wine, they said they cleared it and it's permissible to give. It's a Jewish holiday and it didn't require. You got to have some wine.
Okay, we'll try to get a few more questions in the last couple of minutes. How do you feel about the Gedolei Arachim? Is there any encouragement to read them?
The Gedolim biographies, if they bring out Hanhogas, if they just tell you whether he got along with his mother-in-law and how many children he had and who they married, so it's a waste of time. It's just plain Bikol Zman. The Netziv used to say that it's Atzas Hayetzer to read biographies of Gedolim because it just makes Bikol Zman. You don't get nothing out of it. But if you read a biography that brings out what the Midas Chasidus of the Tzaddik were, and things that you can follow. So then it's worthwhile. You pick up Midas Toivus, a nice hanhogas from different people. I enjoy reading biographies of the Gedolim. Rabbi Hutner has a famous comment in one of his letters. He writes, many of the Gedolim biographies, they write, when the child was born, the whole house lit up, and at the age of 2, he knew all of Tanakh, and the age of 5, he finished Talmud Bavli. So if you're going to describe the God like that, so the house didn't light up when I was born, and I didn't finish Tanakh, I didn't begin Tanakh till after my Bar Mitzvah, and I still didn't finish learning all of Talmud Bavli. I don't stand a chance of being like him. So he said that's not a smart idea to write biographies to say what a brilliant person he was, because the readers of your biography were not so brilliant when they were young, so they don't stand a chance to be like him. What you should emphasize, Rabbi Hutton said, what you should emphasize is the idea, as the Pasuk says, Kisheva Yipot Tzadik become. That Tzadik had big nisyonis, and he could have fallen in, and a lot of times he did fall in, and then he pulled himself out of it. He had the same problems that you had, or similar problems to what you have, and he succeeded in overcoming the problems. So you can also succeed in overcoming your problems. He brought out the idea. That's what's important about biographies of Gedolim. You have to say how they succeeded despite the fact that there was difficulty, that they faced difficulties.
Okay, it's good luck, Donovan. Next question. There are many different types of questions that were sent in very popularly. So this is the only question that was sent in 3 times. The same exact question. Does everything there's a value to make one's bed in the morning?
To make your bed in the morning?
Yeah.
Sure. About that, a sloppy bed is a sloppy mind. You have to dress neatly. You have to have, in some yeshivas, they wouldn't let you down in shachris if you didn't make your bed. In the Musa yeshivas, you have to be neat on everything. Sure, I think it is important.
Do you think the yeshivas
are
not that
policy? Well, half the students will be dropped. The parents, the mother should adopt that policy. They should make, I remember when my children were young, now all of my children are married, they have their own children. But I remember when my children were young, so they would sometimes go visit by friends of theirs and sleep over for Shabbos or whatever, weekend. So some of them, my children were always used to when they took off their clothes, they put in the hamper. So many of the places where they would be visiting, they had maids, they had non-Jewish maids taking care of everything. So the children would drop their clothing on the floor. So my kids would say, why are you dropping on the floor? Put it in the hamper. No, you're not allowed to put it in the hamper. You have to be sloppy so the maid will have what to do. So the parents train the children like that. They should drop the dirty laundry on the floor. That's terrible. The parents should train the children to make their bed. I don't think the yeshivas should be the parents' responsibility. Should have trained them before they came to high school, before they came to elementary school. They should be trained to make their beds.
Okay, Reddy was a student in the college. Was there a specific course or a specific type of study that Reddy enjoyed the most?
I enjoyed everything. What I enjoy most, I liked history. I found history very interesting, world history. I found it very interesting. All the different movements and different generations, way different generations, people think differently. Intellectual history, I found very interesting. Jewish history is always fascinating.
Okay, we have time for final questions. So, if Rebbe's comfortable answering, was there ever a specific first deal or a specific impersonation of Rebbe that Rebbe thought was pretty spot on?
The ones who imitated me, Rabbi Feldman was Givaldik. Daniel Feldman. And before him, he was very good. He was better than the original. and then before him, there was Bobby Goldberg. Bobby Goldberg is a professor of math. He just had Shiva. His father used to be a Rebbe in Yeshiva. His father just passed away deep into his 90s. His father was a Rebbe in Yeshiva for quite a while. He was very good. He used to imitate me also, but he was like a Purim Rav. He would, like in the European yeshivas, they'd make fun of the rabbis, but they would have a Purim Rav. He would say Purim Torah. Yeah, these were the two. I remember when I was a student in the yeshiva, so they had every Purim, they had one of the students of Rabbi Soloveitchik to get up. And Rabbi Soloveitchik had Yartzeit for his father on Gimel Shvat. That was a month before Purim. And he would deliver a major Yartzeit Shia for 4 hours, 2 hours halacha and 2 hours drush. So on Purim, one of the students would get up and he would say he has Yartzeit for Haman and he wants to deliver Yartzeit Shia. So the whole thing was a takeoff. It was a takeoff on Rabbi Soloveitchik's Yartzeit Shia, but it was all with Litzonis. So I was a high school student. I didn't know what Rabbi Soloveitchik was giving Shia on. I used to attend the Yartzeit Shiva, but I didn't know what he was giving Shiva on the yeshiva. So the youngest student didn't understand all the jokes. So the older boys had to explain to us what all the jokes were all about. But that was always with the Kishrin. That was Baba Kishrin used to write the Purim Spiel with that Yartzeit Russia. That was always with great talent. Yeah, but the two people who imitated me, the best ones were Rabbi Feldman was in recent years and Bobby Goldberg in early years. Yeah. Shlomo Goldberg.
Okay, I guess as a final question. So whether you're going through the periods of faith or that you're not, what does everybody want to see from the Talmid of the Yeshiva after they leave law of the Yeshiva?
Everyone has to realize we are the nation of the book. We are the Am, the Goyim told us. We are the Am HaSefer, the nation. Everyone has to be a Talmid Chacham. Not everybody's cut up to be a rabbi in a shul or a rebbe in a yeshiva. Not everybody has the patience, not everybody has the talent, whatever, but everyone is cut out for learning Torah. So all the boys should be Mavi Sedra every week, and they should learn Gemara, and they should learn Tanakh, and they should learn Halacha. They should be Talmid Chachamim, whatever you do for a living. There are doctors and lawyers who know how to learn better than rebbes in the yeshiva. They're just not cut out to be rebbes in the yeshiva, but they know how to learn. And if they have the ability to, they should give a shiur in the shul once a week, twice a week, once a month. You should share the Torah. The more Torah there is, the better it'll be for the whole Jewish nation, the better it'll be for the whole world. All the boys in the yeshiva should be into learning whatever they do for the, whether they become doctors, lawyers, engineers, or Indian chiefs. You have to learn Torah. Rama writes from the day, whether you're healthy or you're sick, whether you're young or old, people make a mistake. They think only when they're the age of students, when they're students, they have to learn. After they graduate, they don't have to learn. No, you never graduate. There's always more to learn. There's always more to learn. Very good. Interesting question. Yashikayach. Okay, what time is Shachar?